Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're right here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
And of course, Carol, that's part of a team of 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
And Jason, you can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio every weekday.
Or watch us on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
Let's head down virtually to Mexico and talk about something that's going on there. It is about the pandemic and about COVID. It's also about politics and one of the biggest companies in the world, and certainly an incredibly important company in Mexico. Amy Stillman is Mexico energy reporter for Bloomberg. Her story in Business Week, how AMLO's crown jewel became the world's deadliest COVID company. She joins us from Mexico City. Joel Weber joins us from Massachusetts. Joel, this is fascinating and troubling.
Yeah, that's right. And one that Amy's been covering for a while. And, you know, when she first kind of brought it to our attention, she said, look, there's been a lot of deaths at Pemex, COVID deaths. And then those numbers just kept going higher. And we now know that more employees at Pemex have died than at any other company in the world. And the root of that problem is really the oil platforms, which have been sort of ground zero for a lot of the infections. So, Amy, you've been obviously close to this story for weeks now. Why were the platforms so bad, and where has it gone from there?
Yeah, thank you, Joel, and thank you, Jason and Carol. So this story certainly was, it's a complicated one, and I don't want to, pin it all down to one thing, but certainly the platforms we're seeing were the locus of infection. One of the reasons is that these are, spaces which are very small, where you have like between 200 and 300 workers that all sleep together, eat together. They eat together in dining rooms of about 100 people. They're unventilated. They sleep in bedrooms of four, which are like roughly, 150 feet big. So essentially these people are really sort of like squished in together. And, the thing is that Mexico had its first COVID cases reported at the end of February, but in March and April, Pemex was still operating its platforms at full capacity, according to the workers that I spoke with for the investigation. They weren't implementing sufficient sanitation measures. And perhaps most importantly, they weren't disembarking vulnerable workers.
Right.
So you have a very big population of people within Pemex that have problems like obesity, diabetes, hypertension, and these people were still going on the platform.
Yeah, it's tragic. And it was, those platforms essentially a petri dish in terms of COVID-19. So it's a virus story, but it's also a political story because Pemex is, as you write in your reporting, Amy, it's, a key source of government revenue. It's also been a key part of the Mexican president, known as AMLO for short, as a way of kind of reversing what's been going on in that country in terms of economic policy. So it's kind of in this weird place.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's very important to highlight. Whereas, you know, other oil companies are beholden to their shareholders, in the case of Pemex, it's very much beholden to the Mexican government. And so much of what, you know, Pemex's policies around COVID, you know, have really mirrored what we've seen in Mexico as a whole, which is to say, you know, a situation where the economy is being put forward, you know, above some of the safety of people, because this is really a country that, you know, people, you know, they sort of work, you know, in the informal sector, and it's very hard for people to stay home. And essentially, Mexico has seen a huge number of deaths, generally speaking, and in Pemex, it really hasn't been any different. The other thing that's really important to mention here, you know, is that the hospital system in Mexico is really in poor shape. And so a lot of these people are going to the hospitals and they're not getting sufficient care. So that...
Well, and Pemex has its own healthcare system, right, too, Pemex?
Yeah, that's correct. So Pemex has a healthcare system that incorporates about 750,000 people. That's not just Pemex workers, but retirees and also their family members.
And I'm just curious, Amy, like when the how much have the hospitals, really the health centers that are basically for employees and their families, any sense of if those areas have become hot spots just by the sheer number of people that have overwhelmed the system?
Yeah, for sure. So the Pemex hospitals, there's about 24 Pemex hospitals and clinics around the country. They're very dispersed, much like the company's own, you know, installations and refineries, petrochemical plants, et cetera. And so, you know, you have people that are going to these hospitals all over the country, and, you know, they've definitely become, you know, they've contributed to the outbreaks. You know, the other thing is that the platform workers sort of, you know, they also travel from all over the country. So you're seeing, like, the, you know, the concentration of outbreaks in the hospitals, on the platforms, and then that's also spreading across the country more widely. So that also has a reverberation.
So talk to us about the refinery side of this, because the platforms, as you say, are one piece of it. I mean, this is such a, as you pointed out rightly, Amy, a complicated story because of all the tentacles of this company.
Yeah. So the refineries and the petrochemical facilities, which there are many, and they make up the bulk of Pemex's employee base, have had sort of mixed results. Some of the refineries and petrochemical plants have been implementing good sanitation measures since sort of mid-March, but then others, like Salina Cruz refinery, which is the biggest in Mexico, or the Catarata refinery, which is in the northern part of the country, their workers have told me that the sanitation measures aren't being implemented, that they're not getting face masks, that they're still going to work when they're vulnerable workers. So there's still a lot of problems in the way the policy has been implemented.
Right.
I think it's also important to highlight that, you know, a lot of workers are unhappy with the union, the official Pemex union, because they say that it hasn't really been fighting their cause.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a terrific piece of reporting. Congratulations. A deep investigation for sure into Pemex, the politics, and the pandemic. Excuse me. You can read that story on the Bloomberg and at Bloomberg.com, Carol.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? And just, you know, workers who still feel like, you know, they've got to get to work, and then they're in conditions, you know, what's interesting, they break it down too about, you know, office workers, there's space, but, and then depending on your position out on the platform also impacts kind of the living conditions that you have on that platform.
Absolutely. Our thanks to Amy Stillman, the writer in Mexico City, and Joel Weber, of course, the editor of Bloomberg Business Week.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
All right. Well, it was the story, the headline that stopped Wall Street in its tracks this morning. I actually gasped, I have to say, when I saw this across my Bloomberg terminal. It's huge news. Citigroup picking Jane Fraser as its next CEO. As you just heard Charlie say, the first woman atop any major global bank. She will succeed Mike Corbat. He's retiring in February after more than 8 years in the top job. And man, what an 8 years it has been when you think back to 2012 and what was going on in the rebuilding of Wall Street and that bank. She was named the company's president last year. She will join the board immediately. We're going to hear from Jenny Serene in just a second. She's been covering that story for Bloomberg. It's the most read. But we want to hear from Jane Fraser herself. Back in June, she spoke with Bloomberg's Shanali Basak on the gender pay gap on Wall Street. Check it out.
We call it the ugly truth. Women are paid 73% the median of what men are because we just don't have enough women in the higher paying and the more senior roles. That is even more true in our black population. And it's true in different parts of the world with different populations. But I think the piece now is to begin moving away from the ills of the past and behaviors of the past and start converging on a positive vision for the future.
All right, that is Jane Fraser, of course, now the new CEO of Citigroup. She's speaking there with our Shanali Basak. They spoke back in June, and they were talking, as you can see, or just heard, about gender pay gap on Wall Street. Let's get into this story because it is the most read, and we now have the first woman atop a major, any major global bank. So let's get into it. Jenny Serene, finance reporter at Bloomberg News, on the phone on this Thursday. So Jenny, this is a big deal.
Definitely. Yeah, it'll be super interesting to kind of see, you know, already to see how it's been received. You know, you've had other CEOs like Goldman Sachs' David Solomon came out this morning congratulating Jane and also congratulating Mike Corbat on such a, you know, long, incredible tenure. And so, yeah, it'll be super interesting as she kind of moves into that role and, you know, right, we're in this midst of this huge crisis, kind of how she takes the reins and really takes charge.
You know, Jenny, it's interesting. Hat tip to our colleague Scarlett Fu, because she pointed out to us, and I know that this is data that you know as well, when you look at women on Wall Street and especially at the biggest banks. You look at the board level, Citi is actually better than its peers there on that basis. 8 out of 17 members are women, compared with Goldman Sachs, where 4 out of 11. So 47% for Citi. It shows that I think they've been thinking about this at least a little bit more seriously, or at least more more apparently or measurably at the most senior levels. Is that the sense you get? You know this firm and you know Wall Street so well.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a fair way to think about it. I mean, Citigroup wasn't just the first on Wall Street. It was actually one of the first companies in the entire country to offer an unadjusted look at its pay gap between its male and female employees. And it said at the time that it was taking that step to really give people a yardstick and give people a way to hold them accountable to make sure that they tried to close that gap. And they have made progress, and they're still making progress. So I think it's definitely been something that, you know, Mike Corbat and a lot of his, you know, top lieutenants have thought about really intensely and wanted to be seen as a leader on. And it's really not just the gender diversity. It's all sorts of diversity. It's a lot of like social and environmental commitments. And, you know, one of the things we hear a lot from them is it really helps them stand out from a talent perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're going out and trying to recruit millennial bankers and coders and deal makers, you know, those types of talent, that young talent wants to see this. So that's kind of driving a lot of their interest on this.
So not surprised it was Citi then, Jenny, considering what they've been up to in terms of diversity and initiatives and inclusion at the bank.
I definitely think, I mean, I guess there's lots of other, you know, top female lieutenants at lots of the different banks.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's such a great glass ceiling to break and to see this news today. But certainly Citi has definitely, you know, sought to distinguish itself on this front. But still a surprise. I mean, it's crazy that it's news, but it's, you know, good news.
Big news. Big news for sure. Yeah, you're right. And that, I think, was everybody's reaction, is crazy that it took this long, but good that it's happening. So she's got a big job. Mike Corbat, he had a big job when he took this job 8 years ago. What is first and foremost on Jane Fraser's list as she takes the CEO role?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to think about the institution that Citi was when Mike took over. You know, his main thought at that time was we have to simplify this bank. And they've just gone on this huge effort to really slim down, and they're really down to two core businesses now, their consumer bank and their institutional group. And so for Jane, it's a little bit different. You know, now that they've kind of gotten it to maybe the size that they want it to be, she's got to be focused on profitability. She's got to be focused on catching back up with J.P. Morgan and Bank of America. You know, before they abandoned their profitability targets earlier this year, Citigroup just really massively lags behind even what it's targeting from a profitability perspective. And so she's got a big job ahead of her, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what levers she decides to pull in order to achieve that.
Yeah, so, and not surprising, she comes from the consumer side, Carol.
Yeah. Who's next? Is there pressure on another bank to say, you know what, we need to be out there?
I think it's a really great point, and one we've been batting around for sure. And you know, it's interesting. We've written a lot this year about our Wall Street CEOs too big to retire, and you've seen these CEOs be in these positions for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years now. And so we'll see. You know, there's always the chatter about Jamie Dimon over at J.P. Morgan. There's lots of chatter about Brian Moynihan over at Bank of America, and so it'll be interesting to kind of see if this forces anybody's hands, or, you know, it could also have the opposite effect of kind of putting a little bit of pressure off the industry.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. That's a really interesting point. Jenny Strain, great reporting today. It's the most read story. It's the thing everyone on Wall Street is talking about, not just a CEO changeover, but a historic one in many ways. My bet, Jamie Dimon.
Will be the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. And they've got a great lineup, too.
And he's probably mad that Mike Corbat beat him to it.
Damn it, Mike. I was just like, come on.
I was just going to do that.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's going to drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, it's time for the Drive to the Close. Only about 11 minutes to go before the close of trading. It's a market that seems to have made up its mind. It's going south today after whipsawing, as we said at the top of the show. Let's get into it. J.J. Kinahan, Chief Market Strategist for TD Ameritrade, joining us once again on the phone from Chicago. So where do we go from here, J.J.? Because I feel like the last 4 or 5 days, we're like, okay, we needed a correction. And then everything seemed a little better yesterday, but now we get into today. Is this just the normal course of volatility that we're going to have to get used to for a while?
Yeah, I think you're putting it really well. It's just us trying to find a level to sort of settle in at. You know, obviously, as you said, Jason, it's been crazy moves. The one thing I look at is the fact that the VIX just broke 30. Mm-hmm. So the VIX really didn't react much to this until about the last 30 minutes or so. So, you know, I think people had some news today, and the fact that we're not really getting any COVID-19 news, which is really the overriding story, earnings season's kind of done. So any other piece of news that we pick up that can send the market tumbling or flying, it does. I think the couple of big things is the number one being, there's not great conviction right now. There was really good conviction a couple of weeks ago, I think, that things were going to be okay. We'll get back to work soon. Now I think we're in this area where people are trying to figure out, you know, you had the announcements out of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs about people getting back to work, but on the other hand, which may hurt some of the technology stocks, but on the other hand, you know, we don't see a vaccine in the near-term future. So I think there's just all these questions coming together at once, as well as the news today, you know, that the Senate, they just couldn't get a deal passed.
So what do you do as an investor here, JJ?
Well, I think the first thing you do, Carol, is kind of say to yourself, okay, do I think that these technology stocks, you know, that have been the leaders?
Oh, looks like we had a little technical snafu, as they say. JJ Kinahan, Chief Market Strategist, TD Ameritrade. So hopefully maybe we can get him back here. But, you know, listen, Jason, the last 4 or 5 days, you know, going into last week where you saw a bunch of selling, right? We went to pretty much a technical correction,
yeah,
10% correction. And then we saw a rally this week. And, you know, what we were hearing is people saying, buy the dips.
Yeah.
You know, because it was those names that had really run up that now you could get them at certainly a cheaper price. It's an interesting environment. And I think, as we talked with the Chipotle CEO, there's a lot of uncertainty still out there. And there's a lot of things we still don't know. And so you're, you know, grabbing onto different metrics to try and figure out what's the market environment going to be. Time will tell.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we're going to hear from an interesting pair after the close of trading. Oracle and Peloton, I believe, are both going to put out numbers. Two very different companies, to say the least. So let's actually ask J.J. Kinahan about that. He's back. J.J., I was just saying, as you were coming back on, Oracle and Peloton, an unlikely duo to hear from after the close of trading. What do each of those names tell us about and potentially tell us about where we are in this market and where we are in this sort of recovery-ish that we're in?
Yeah, I think I'll start with Oracle because I think it tells us a little bit more, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. And, you know, first of all, it's kind of an interesting stock to me because it's not what I'll, you know, air quotes, sexy. It's just a very reliable company. But what I think it may say to us is, what can they do in the cloud business? What does it tell us about some of the high flyers recently, particularly maybe a Salesforce, et cetera, that they're going to compete against? And so I think that that one is going to be really interesting. Not only one of the things I like about Oracle is because they are such an established company, they can give you a great indication of not only what's going on in the U.S., but what's going on worldwide. So I also think that outside the initial numbers that come out, I find their conference to be one that's particularly interesting. Obviously, they've given up some of the gains they had earlier this morning. You know, the stock's down about a buck and a half from where it was earlier today. So it'll be interesting as it's lost momentum into the close to see how these numbers come out, what they have to say overall in terms of the worldwide economy. And are they seeing patches that are recovering faster than others? So
yeah.
From that point of view, I think it's really going to be interesting, and you may be able to glean some of that information, particularly for those investors who have multinational companies on some of the countries they are doing well or doing poorly, to use that for the information you have in investing in others.
JJ, I really hope Larry Ellison isn't listening, because you calling his company not sexy, I mean, have you seen his boat? Come on, man.
Well, okay, the sailboats are. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There you go. So Peloton, talk to me briefly about that one.
Well, Peloton, you know, again, I think this is one of those stocks that falls very much into the confusion trade. And what I mean by that is, are we going back to work? Aren't we going back to work? You know, pretty good price point on the equipment. Obviously, they had the nice day, you know, earlier this week with announcing some new equipment and some price cuts on what they have. Great brand loyalty overall, but you have to say, is that going to be enough to carry them?
Yeah.
I think that this is one that, you know, I just talked about the press conference today for Oracle. To me, this is one where we get the vote pretty quickly on the stock over the next couple of days, because I really feel that this is the vote on whether we're going, how the market in the short term at least uses going back to work or not going back to work over the next week or two.
All right. What worries you, though? What keeps you up at night right now? Is it the election? Is it the virus? Is it, what is it? Just got about 45 seconds.
Okay, well, I'll say this. The virus is always the overhanging story, and it's like a cloud that can release rain at any time, but it's kind of sunshiny when it's not over you. But as I said, that's the number one worry, of course, Carol. The election, I don't think people will really start planning for another few weeks. In the near term, I think it's valuations. And are we still too reliant on a few tech stocks? It will be nice if we can get some of these consumer discretionary stocks going, et cetera. Financials still seem to be stuck in the mud, and that's kind of where we need to go, because we know that we're seeing struggles elsewhere also. So I really think financials are the key to us having the next leg up. I think we might go back up in the short term, test the highs we were at, you know, we'll test these lows again, and as we head to October, be really range-bound.
There we go. All right. We'll see what sort of vol the next few weeks bring. All right, JJ Kenahan, thank you so much. Always good to catch up with you. You, of course, are the Chief Market Strategist at TD Ameritrade, joining us on the phone from Chicago. Thanks so much for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, you can always listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube by searching Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.